Thank you very much. My name is Tim. I'm an alcoholic. Since we all seem to be saying dates of sobriety, I'm going to say mine, which is the 24th of July, 1993. I don't have anything to say, although I'm rather hoping that my higher power does. I have no particular axe to grind today. What I'm put in mind of listening to that reading is Dr. Bob making all of his amends on day one of sobriety. In fact, having to make amends in order to stop relapsing. Now, I don't think that should be read as an injunction to newcomers to go and read, to go and take step nine on day one. Because Dr. Bob had been in a spiritual program for a number of years, but that spiritual program didn't involve stopping drinking, at least not as its core element. And he then meets Bill, and the two notions of stopping drinking forever, because you have to, because you're an alcoholic, and there's no way you're going to ever maintain moderate drinking or sobriety on your own without God. That gets put together with the spiritual program of action. And what it says in the big book is this price of sobriety seemed high on the basis suggested. And he wasn't willing to pay the price in step nine until he had to stay, had to do that in order to stay sober. For me, really being utterly painstaking about step nine, I was a number of years sober before I really went through the pass with a very fine tooth comb. But the first time through the steps, I was reasonably thorough. I was thorough in line with the level of my consciousness. So as far as I was concerned, I'd done a complete job. There was nothing in my consciousness that I felt I needed to make amends for, which I hadn't. My consciousness expanded after that. I realized that there were more things. Unfortunately, I built up more things I needed to make amends for. But I needed to grab hold of the AA program very firmly, grab hold of all parts of it to stop relapsing. So Dr. Bob's missing piece was step nine. My missing piece was the whole thing. I was attending meetings, and the fact was there were plenty of people around me who were staying sober just on attending meetings and chit-chatting in cafes after meetings. Now that does work for a lot of people for a while, but I had the fortune really to have gone to the same group pretty much every Friday for the first 8 years. Then I was living abroad for 2 years. Then for another 4 years, I was back there. And occasionally now I come across people who were in that group with me in the first few years. And it wasn't a strong group from a sort of step point of view, but it was cohesive socially. So lots of people still know where everyone else is and where people ended up. And I have to say, oh, this isn't a scientific observation, it's about as close as I can get. But the only people of us who are still around 30 years later who haven't slipped in the meantime were the absolute ultra-orthodox hardliners about the steps. Everyone else drank again, most died. I wish that wasn't the case, but unfortunately it is. It's a slow burn, though. There are people that we know who drank after 10, 15, 20 years. A number of people died sober as well. But again, it was the people at the extreme end. There's a phrase that one needs to be in the middle of the AA bed. I sort of know what that means. To be in the thick of it in AA is a very good thing. But I think a better image is to be in the school bus, sitting at the front with the teachers who are a little dull, and most of what they say goes over your head, but you're not sitting on the back seats, sticking chewing gum in people's hair and drinking vodka. I think it to be successful in AA, one has to be, and this is very unpopular thought, so if you don't like unpopular thoughts, then block your ears now. I think one has to be a little bit of a goody two shoes. One has to want to do it properly. I know someone that always, whatever they share, is a lovely person, but whenever he shares, he says, "I'm so glad this program is only suggested." And I thought, I don't know what possible benefit that is. The reason it's suggested is because the authors don't want, they're not in a position to force me to take steps, but they do beg, which is not far from forcing, frankly. We beg of you to be fearless and thorough, and we suggest this program. In other words, we offer it to you. We have no sanction against you if you refuse to do it or stop halfway through. But John Barleycorn will have a sanction against you. You get turned over to the other side. The police force in AA is not from within AA. It is alcohol. Dare I even say, in all its forms, and I don't just mean ethanol and the other things which have a comparable effect in certain. Now, the point of all this, it sounds like I'm swerving all over the place and saying nothing about step nine. In fact, this is entirely about step nine, because in step one, I recognize unless I form a relationship with a higher power, which is a working relationship, it's not one of God being Santa Claus. It's one of me serving God. Unless that happens, I'm not going to stay sober. And I have a working relationship with God. My life, frankly, is the working relationship with God. But one can't simply take up that occupation. There needs to be a burning away of everything else. And the process of the first nine steps is not a process of constructing something. I know some people will object, well, we're constructing an arch through which we shall walk a free man, as it says in the big book. But that's a metaphor for what is happening. What is really happening is destruction, is disillusionment. And the great disillusionment in step nine, I'll give you two examples. The first one was how relatively insignificant I was in the lives of almost everyone I made amends to, and how much more significant I was in the lives of the people that genuinely loved me, although I never believed or trusted it at the time. Both of those were significant shocks. The second thing which has come out of it, particularly with family members, making amends to them did require conversations. Being British, these were low key, undramatic, very much unlike the conversations you'll see in Hallmark films or on Channel 5. Those conversations were had, but the real amend is the follow through, sometimes for decades. And when I look back over the last 3 decades, the point of my life, I don't think has been work and career and all of those things. I don't think it is up there at all. That's at the level of eating square meals and sleeping 8 hours a night. The important thing is the relationships with family, which were enabled by making amends. And I think this is the point about amends. Until the past is cleared away by a sincere admission of what my wrongs are, and then having it revealed to me how those wrongs really affected people, people simply were not going to trust me. And this is the disillusionment, the fantasy structures of my life. People talk about building castles in the air and moving into them. These fantasy structures were swept away, not really in steps 4 and 5. That shook the foundations. It was step nine which really brought everything brought reality home. I thudded as I thumped back down to ground level with Step 9 the first time, and in particular the second major run through Step 9 at around 15 years, when I dotted all the I's and crossed all the T's and looked for every book on my shelf which hadn't been bought by me in a bookshop. Even all those little things one picks up, which sticky little fingers enable one to acquire, which we think no one will notice the loss of that. Finding all of those items and returning them, all the little damages I'd never paid for, the slights, the anything that I might conceivably have done to harm someone, I went back and made amends for. And Step 9 is a little bit like open heart surgery. It feels as though your heart is literally coming out of your body making some of these amends. I remember one of them, is there anyone here called Cat? Well, I've already let the cat out of the bag, but there isn't an actual Karen here, I don't think. We know that the theme of the rather unfairly, where Karen is used to describe the difficult customer. Well, I was one of those difficult. I out-Karened any actual Karen in the world. And I had to make a series of amends to shops where I'd misbehaved and gyms where I'd misbehaved self-righteously. Unimaginable to those that know me that I could conceivably be self-righteous. And the way I, largely fearless, frankly, in social situations, would feel my heart beating against my sternum, having to face seeing people who knew me steel themselves for me as I was about to open my mouth, wondering what the hell is coming down the tubes this time, and then relaxing when, for the first time, it was actually an apology. I came face to face with the monstrous business end of my behaviour. And it takes the wind out of your sails. It certainly did with mine. The purpose of Step 9 is, I believe, to bring about humility and a sincere abandonment to the work of serving God. A friend of mine says, he imagined saying to his higher power, "Can I come into heaven?" And the higher power saying, "Marvellous, yes, absolutely, we've got a feast all ready for you." And my friend said, "Well, can I come in now?" Then the higher power says, "You've got some business to sort out first. Go and sort out your business first, then you can come in." And you say, "Well, can I come in just and have a slice of Battenberg cake or a wheel of brie?" And God says, "No, you can't have anything until your business is sorted out." And the business which needed to be sorted out in the first 9 steps is to withdraw my blueprint for the universe, which was the basis for all of my resentments. No blueprint, no resentments. To have resentment means that I've compared your behavior to my blueprint and found it wanting. The blueprint had to go. The second thing was to admit my faults to another person. And the third thing was to make amends in Step 9. And the test, I think, if one is not acting out in other addictions and compos mentis and not drugged in any way, the test of whether Step 9 has been complete is whether one wakes up to an awareness of the suffering of others so profound and so complete, one can't in all conscience go back to living for oneself. If that awakening doesn't happen, I wouldn't know what to throw at the problem, because for me, that was what did it. Whenever I, as my ego regularly prompts me to do, attempt to segue or sashay or sidle back into a more materialistic way of living, My fingers get burnt immediately. It's as though what was a pleasant environment for years has become utterly, utterly toxic. So one shouldn't take step nine lightly. If it's taken thoroughly, well, in my case, and I've seen it happen with others, utterly transform your life. In two ways. Firstly, or I'll do secondly. Secondly, the new basis of serving God becomes the point of one's life. But the first thing it will do, I think, is guarantee sobriety if that state of grace is maintained by not building up new amends to make, and if one needs to make them, making them promptly. So if you didn't know what step nine was before that, you'll be none the wiser now. But I've run out of time, so I'm going to stop. Thanks.